Welcome to Backfence Unhinged, a conversational rumspringer to leisurely enjoy along with the middle of your day, afternoon, or night. You're about to hear an unhinged story about a change of heart from Mindy Netafee. Or shall we say, a Dr. Mindy Netafee. That's right. Then comes the second unhinged part. We'll ask Mindy some questions about said story and maybe even share a story or two of our own. Hi, Andrew Dixon.
Hello, Frain Masters.
We are the R in that sentence.
Yes, we are.
We are. Yeah. I'm curious. Have you ever had a big change, like a thing where you were in the middle of something, something else came along, and then you're like, I'm changing my mind?
I feel like my life, when I was like 30, I had three different directions. And I could have tried to become a performance artist,
right?
I continue to be a performance artist,
right?
Sell screenplays, which I was maybe on the verge of ?
Yeah.
Or move back to Portland and take a stable job in advertising. And I took the. I ended up I didn't necessarily follow my heart, but I followed my head. I think.
All right.
I took the job in advertising, and I think it was a good move.
All right.
Yeah.
You hit a spork in the road.
Yeah, because I still get to do all the other stuff.
Right.
But I also didn't have to worry about where rent was coming from anymore.
That's a nice feeling.
Yeah. How about yourself?
The first time I moved to LA, it was super whimsical. It was, I actually just talked to my ex-boyfriend about this. There's this one day where I left the apartment in the morning, and I can only say that this was some kind of fugue state that I entered into as I walked away from the apartment. I like to walk a lot, but something happened to me where I was like, let's just keep going. And I walked for 7 hours.
You did the thing.
Yeah. I didn't have a cell phone, so it was before that. And so it was just he was worried about me. And when I got back, I just looked like a zombie. I can kind of remember the trip. But after that, I was like, I'm going to take a quick trip to L.A., you know. And so I borrowed money and just drove to L.A. out of nowhere and survived for 3 months and came back home.
Amazing.
Yeah, before I went down again. So it was weird. It was a really weird moment. Anyway, that was,
I do wonder what a somatic trauma therapist would have to say about that. It just so happens.
We have one here.
We have Dr. Mindy Netafee, a poet, artist, educator, and somatic trauma therapist. She's published 3 full-length poetry collections and the how-to book on writing poetry, Glitter in the Blood, which I love. And her latest collection is Open Your Mouth Like a Bell. Mm. Right Bloody.
Yes.
Welcome, Mindy.
From Right Bloody. Right. Yes. I've heard Mindy talk about fugue states before. It's funny that a fugue state came up in this conversation.
It
wasn't unplanned.
Yeah.
But I can't believe we're finally having you here. You are Backfence royalty.
It's true.
I'm part of the DNA of
the
show, right?
You are definitely part of the DNA of the show. A host, a producer. A confidant.
Confidant.
Impresario in the storytelling world. doctor of storytelling as well as depth psychology.
It's true.
Yeah. It is.
It's true. I actually climbed the whole mountain, you know, to become a trauma therapist that specializes in how trauma impacts the voice and expression and our ability to be honest and express ourselves authentically. And then, you know, most importantly, what it takes to actually heal from that and to draw people slowly back into connection with themselves and with each other.
Wow.
Could you summarize those 8 years into a sentence or two?
There's something wrong with you. You probably need to see a therapist or a shaman. The end.
Right. The end. It's perfect. I like it. I like that distillation of 8 years of a career.
Yeah.
It was really cool because I got to watch Mindy get her doctorate online because it was during lockdown times, I believe, or maybe just
That's
post.
True. The final, I finished... writing my dissertation, finished my doctorate in 2020. And so I was one of the first people to defend on Zoom. And the only good thing about that was that I got to invite whoever I wanted to friendlies. Come and see what's usually this kind of like scary private experience of being judged by other doctors.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was actually really an incredible moment to watch, to behold. Yeah,
to sort of unveil my research.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was unveiled with aplomb, if I may.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. So, Mindy, you also have, I believe, a story that's about a time when a change came up.
A big change.
A big change.
A big change. This is a story from what I do consider to be my most unhinged year, 2010. 2010. If anybody remembers where they were, you might not. Yeah. I'm in my early 30s at this point, fresh into the 30s. And at this point, I would describe myself as, if I was to go back in time and be my own somatic trauma therapist, I was like a conflict avoidant, people pleasing woman with abandonment issues. So like everybody's favorite kind of person.
You know what? And I would say a small amount of the population.
Yeah.
No one else suffers.
No one can relate with this. No,
it's hard to relate to what you're talking about, but I think we'll all try.
I considered myself, I was like very easygoing, which I now know is false. but at the time, I didn't know that, you know? And it really worked. Like, it worked for me for a really long time.
Oh, it does. It does. Nothing phases Mindy.
Yeah. Until it didn't. And really what happened is that my relationship, I had a sort of long love relationship in my 20s with the guy I fell in love with at the end of my sort of college years. And he was like moody musician with like dyed jet black hair, you know, like the perfect guy.
Right. Also a rarity in the 20s.
It's very uncommon.
People pleaser clickbait.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, what sort of inevitably happens is, you know, we were both very good people, but we were very young. And the relationship starts to sort of fall apart under the strain of both of us, you know, not being grown-ups. I think there was like an incident where he cheated on me, you know, and I didn't leave him, you know, and I stayed.
Were you trying to be the cool girl a little bit? Like,
I was very easygoing about it, actually.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. And, you know, but sort of deep down, my sort of like dread and unease was growing in this relationship. So I decided the best way to address this was to get married. So, right?
Of course.
Because that was going to solve all of our problems. To right. have like a big ritual of commitment, invite all of our friends and family.
It's like, normal in society.
That's right.
It feels good.
Seems like what you should do.
Next steps are taken.
Yeah. If you're not ready to leave, you know, go all in.
Right. Of course.
And so we did. We had a beautiful, you know, Ojai kind of wedding.
Ojai.
It's gorgeous.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
And within 3 or 4 months, I fell in love with someone else. I was like out on tour, like poetry tour, and I fell madly in love with this.
Okay, let's slow down. You're on poetry tour. This seems
like
the perfect place for romance to burble up. I'm sorry, but already it's poetic somehow. Right?
It's so true. And I did feel like I was being, you know, first of all, I tried to sort of ignore it. I was like, oh, this isn't love. I'm just, you know, just sort of, you know, I'm getting to know this person. I really like them. But it starts to, it gets bad. Like, I don't know, if you've fallen in love, some of you before, love is hard drugs. It's hard drugs. It starts dissolving things in your brain, you know.
Oxytocin.
Yeah, it's sort of bad. And eventually it was like so bad. I was so in love. And I thought for sure I was being punished by the gods of love. It's like, how is this happening to me? And it sort of had created finally this sort of perfect storm where I was, regardless of what was going to happen with this person I fell in love with, I could no longer avoid the fact that I didn't want to be with this other person. Like, I could, whatever shades I was able to wear, however I was able to, like, avoid seeing what I needed to see, I suddenly couldn't do it anymore. But I'm also still very conflict avoidant and people pleasing. So the thought of having to face the music and even just have a conversation to tell him what's happened and to start to confess that I actually hadn't wanted to get married in the first place.
Because conflict avoidant, right? Oh, we're going to go back to that. Oh, yes. Gosh.
So I was waking up every morning like sick to my stomach.
Oh.
And just full of dread, you know, but also sort of knowing deep down there was like something I need, you know, there was something I needed to do. Like I needed to grow up and be honest. Like I knew what the right thing to do was, but I just like couldn't do it. Literally every time I would try, I'd work myself to up to do it. My throat would close.
Well, just not today. Can't speak.
Yes. And so later you become a voice expert and you know,
interesting. How that works out. The wounded healer. So I'm like in a state, you know, I'm just in a state and I get an invitation from a good friend of mine named Amber Tamblyn. She's also a poet. She was also an actress and she had been in this movie that she was really excited about. She was really proud of. And she invited me to come to the premiere with her.
Fun.
Super fun. And also like I desperately needed a night off. Like from my life, I needed to get out of my own head. I was like, oh, this is so great. I can just go support my friend, go see this movie and forget about all of this. I don't need to think about all of this.
Get dressed up.
Totally got dressed up. Went to, you know, like an exciting Hollywood movie premiere, beautiful theater. I get there and I meet up with Amber's parents and a couple other friends, other people that are there to support her. And really quickly, Amber's dad, Russ,
yes,
sort of gestures to me to follow him. And I do. And he leads me into this kind of like stairwell, like in the theater, this kind of side stairwell.
Is this mysterious to you? Do you know what's going on here?
Well, what happens is he, you know, produces a joint.
Oh.
Russ
is under the impression that I'm a pot smoker. Because I've never said no to him. I've like never turned down smoking a joint with Russ Tamblyn. If you know who Russ Tamblyn is, you might like sympathize with this.
Let's give a couple of his credits. He was in Twin Peaks.
That's right. I mean, in my mind, he was Laura Palmer's psychiatrist in Twin Peaks.
Right.
How could you not smoke?
And hanging out.
Yeah. Yeah. And he brings you.
Right. I dare you to not smoke a joint with Double Laura dog Palmer's dare. Psychiatrist.
In a
what kind
in a
of
staircase.
Person are you?
Yeah.
I didn't want to be that kind of person. The person who would say no to getting high with Russ Tamblyn.
We don't want you to say no because we want you to tell this story.
So this is not the first time this has happened to me, you know, where Russ sort of is like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get high with Mindy. So he produces a joint. And I'm like, OK, let's do it. And so very quickly, because I actually don't smoke weed, I get very, very high, which is also not the first time this has happened. And I'm like, OK, here we go. I guess I'm just going to go watch this movie totally high. Now, I have no idea what this movie is. Amber's like on purpose actually not told me much about it. I think it's like we're trying to preserve the purity or something.
Right. It's a premiere.
That's
yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So I know it's like kind of about this like mountaineer or something. And, you know, it's like an adventure story. I don't know anything else. I'm extremely high. We find our way to our seats. And those of you who've seen 127 Hours are already tensing up.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe that's the movie.
Because you know what is about to happen.
Oh my, yes.
Yeah, this is a Danny Boyle film. And essentially it's the story of this canyoneer, Aaron Ralston, who's like out hiking somewhere near like Moab in Utah. He's out on like a beautiful, in a canyon. And something happens and a boulder falls on him and traps him. This 800-pound boulder falls on his right arm and traps him in this canyon. He hadn't told anyone where he was going. There's nobody coming to rescue him. He's out in the middle of nowhere. And over the course of 5 days.
127
hours. 127 hours. He has to increasingly get himself ready to do the thing that he's going to have to do to save his own life.
Oh my gosh. Can we just can see the parallels here, right?
He's going to have to cut his own arm off.
Oh my gosh.
Conflict avoidant here.
Let's remember I'm extremely high. I'm feeling everything that happens in this movie, like, to the nth degree.
You're probably holding your arm at this point, too, coddling.
I don't even know that's coming yet. Not really. You know? I'm with this guy who's just, like, trapped, and his life is flashing before his eyes, you know? And he's starting to hallucinate. And at the point, you know, I think there was even a woman, like, not even halfway through the movie, there was a woman that passes out. And like, EMTs have to come in and take her out. That's how intense this movie is.
Oh my gosh.
As we get to the scene that by now we all know is coming, you know, I'm like almost coming out of my seat. I don't know if I can handle it. The music at that point, the scoring is like these high-pitched violin strings. Ugh. So that you're like, you can feel the nerves like being cut. I mean, you know, so I am.
The tendons.
Because let's face it, a bow is a saw, you know?
Oh my God. I'm like, still remember it. Terrible. And just at the moment when you think like, I'm going to have to get up. I can't take this anymore. Or I'm going to pass out like that woman. It, like, works. He frees himself. He somehow, like, one-handed, like, tourniquets his own arm, climbs out of the canyon, like, finds some other hikers, gets rescued, and survives. So extremely, after all that, this, like, wave of euphoria, like, moves through the whole audience as we all, like, get to experience the relief.
Everyone can breathe.
The relief that it's over. So like, you know, incredible ending, big long applause. And then the applause sort of dies down. I'm like, I'm like catching my breath. I've just had like a life-changing experience. And then the person sitting directly in front of me stands up and kind of turns and starts to make their way to the aisle. And I notice he doesn't have an arm. Like he's wearing like a suit jacket that's like tastefully pinned up.
Right.
And it's him. It's Aaron Ralston.
He's been sitting in front of you.
He's been sitting in front of me this entire time. The real person. Suddenly I'm like, oh my God, what's happening? He makes it to the aisle. He makes his way up to the front of the theater. Someone hands him a microphone. Everybody in the theater is like holding their breath. You could hear a pin drop. And he gets up there and he says, you know, I don't like reliving this. Like, this was one of the worst experiences of my life, and I don't enjoy reliving it. It's really hard for me. He said, but one thing I've learned is that the thing that we need the most is stories of survival. And he says, some of you out there right now, you're pinned under a boulder.
Oh, wow.
Good Lord.
And you think that you can't get out. And I'm telling you right now, you can do it.
Damn.
Wow.
And I'm like,
I can still hear the emotion in your voice from this.
Like, wow.
Wow. Yeah.
And I knew, I knew right in that moment that I could do it. That I could do what I needed to do. You know what I mean?
Whatever. So you had 127 hours to do it.
That might be right. from that moment, the clock starts.
Yes, clock is ticking.
I dare anyone to look Aaron Ralston in the face.
Just be like, I'm going to stay in the marriage.
Yeah, yeah. And be like, no. Yeah. I can't do it. I'm sorry, Aaron. Even though, like, this thing that I think is truly, and in the moment, the hardest thing that's ever happened to me, you know, and the most heartbreaking thing that's ever happened to me, and I don't want to cause any pain, and I don't want to be in pain, and avoiding pain was, like, probably the guiding force in my life up until that point. Like, a lot, it is for a lot of us.
Right.
Why wouldn't you?
Right.
And you can't get through your whole life that way. Mm. You actually can't do it. You can't avoid the necessary suffering of life and of growing up.
And don't you feel like it kind of gets worse when you're trying? I feel like I've had moments that are way worse by my own avoidance.
I can tell you 100% it gets worse. Like, the suffering you create by avoiding the sort of real suffering, you know, that's just like your everybody gets a share of it in this life.
Yeah.
And everything you do to run away from it, from dealing with it and from facing it, it becomes like neurotic pain and suffering.
Right.
And actually creates more suffering, not just for you, but for everyone around you. But that was really one of my first, like, I look back and I go, that was the year that I had to make the first real grown-up decision I'd ever made, which was like, this is gonna suck.
Was it as bad as you expected when you finally had that conversation?
It was horrible.
It was, okay.
To this day, I don't like remembering it. And I hope I never have to do it again, you know? I genuinely loved this person. And what a horrible thing to have married someone only months, you know, I think by the time I did finally, you know, we did end up splitting, we'd been married for 5 months.
Wow.
5 months. I became one of those people that was like.
There were still kitchen gifts you hadn't used
yet. That's 127 days.
Hadn't even unwrapped them. Right. Hadn't even unwrapped them.
Wow.
But I also knew it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's like we can all, I wish I had known earlier what I knew then, but that's not how it works.
No.
Like, I mean, it's part, I became so fascinated afterwards with like, what is going on with us? I went to go get a doctorate in studying the unconscious mind. I was like, what is going on with all of us? But you really don't know until you know.
Yeah.
And we're really organized in ways that protect us. Like from knowing what's too painful to know. And so much of the drama in life is that like, oh man, sometimes you have these like eruptions of awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And suddenly you know what you didn't know before. And now the only thing you can do is take responsibility for knowing now and try to forgive yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Try to forgive yourself.
Well, yes. Frayn, do you have a moment that you went from maybe being conflict averse to being able to.
I've got a Rolodex that I need to file through here. There's a lot of them, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just.
I'm just making the assumption that you were at one point in your life conflict averse because I was. Maybe still am.
Well,
and I assume everyone is.
Well, neither of you got the Aaron Ralston medicine.
We didn't. We did not.
That cures you, you know, cured me 100% in that moment of conflict avoidance.
Yeah.
It didn't make me good at conflict.
Yeah,
I think I still had to become good at it, but
yeah, I mean, I guess I could say that there's a person that I was dating and deeply in love with him, and this isn't exactly in the same way, but it was a way of me not dealing with how I feel about myself. So instead of like having a conversation with this person, saying like, "I really love you, but." You know, I feel like this is going to sound much sadder than it is, but it's just like, you're so good looking and awesome. You're going to figure out that I'm like not good looking and not awesome. It's like a total imposter syndrome thing. So I'm just going to go ahead and break this off before I'm just going
to
break up with you.
To avoid the pain of being rejected by you after some time has gone by and I really care about you.
Yeah. And then guess what? Then it's just like, oh, I wonder why I can't be in a relationship. And, you know, I think about that moment a lot because he didn't get it, you know, and I just had to. It still pops up for me in places, this exact avoidance and suffering situation. And it's so like whenever I tell people, like, oh, and you're like, yeah, I mean, I guess. But also, I do hope it's one that I work in. I mean, I've slowly chipped away at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over, you know, 127 years, I'll get it done.
127 years is all it will take.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have compassion for your younger self at this point?
I do have some compassion because, you know, that didn't come from nowhere. It came from experiences.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, I just decided one day that this is a thing that's true about me. It's like things that had been said to me. And I was like, I don't want to feel that again either. Yeah. So. It's a bit of a pickle, you know.
Mm.
What about you, Andrew?
Historically, deathly allergic to conflict of any kind.
That's what makes us such good hosts.
keep going. But I think, you know, having kids and suddenly, you know, when they were younger, there just are inevitably situations where you have to advocate for them, sometimes very strongly. And it's that thing where, remember, you know, the first time I was asked to do fundraising And I was like, well, if it's not for me, like I can get up in a room full of people right. and ask for money for something else. Right. So it was that, I think, having young kids and being in situations where you really like, either I'm going to stand up for them or this thing is going to happen that is going to, you know, affect their childhood and beyond.
Yeah.
So that helped.
The stakes have to be that high, yeah. I think, to break us out of it.
Yeah. And to your point, like, I wasn't good at it. It took some doing.
Getting over it doesn't make you good at it.
Yeah.
Because conflict is actually a whole skill set that you have, that, like, the body has to learn.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. yeah.
Does play school make that skill set for kids?
Yes. It's called sweating for fun.
Well, hey, it's time for Bree's Hot Minute, brought to you by Powell's bookstore manager, Bree Ho. Bree has actually been in a conflict resolution workshop, but she took a break during lunch to listen in, and she's got some book recommendations based on Mindy's story.
I realize that I don't recommend enough classic books on the podcast, and listening to Mindy's story that had some themes of love and dutiful loyalty made me think of my favorite Jane Austen book, Persuasion. It's one of my top five favorite books of all time. In Persuasion, Anne falls in love with Captain Wentworth as a young woman, but is convinced to break the engagement. 8 years later, they meet again and somehow overcome their hurt feelings and misunderstandings to find their way back to each other. For my second book, I can't not recommend something about survival or being in the woods. And Nevada Barr is sort of like a more modern Agatha Christie writer, but her mysteries are set in the national parks and all around the character Anna Pigeon, who's a park ranger. The first one is called Track of the Cat, and it follows Anna as she investigates a murder of another park ranger in West Texas. It's a great series, and you'll burn through the books if you like mysteries and books set in the out-of-doors. That's it. Back to Fran and Andrew.
Thank you, Bree. Those were great.
Yes.
I like those a lot.
Suggestions.
Nice. Always spot on, I gotta say. Always, always.
Well, Mindy, where can people find out maybe more about you, or maybe even sign, like, work with you if that's a possibility?
Wow. Well, I do have a website. Like, I have an artist website, thecultofmindy.com. So you don't have to know how to spell my last name to find me online.
Smart.
Smart.
Just become a cult member. Go to thecultofmindy.com. I have a Substack I write called In the River of What's Happening Now. That's just posts about the moon.
Oh,
if
it's
you're into that kind of thing.
It's so beautiful. If you need a solve in your box, which
it kind of combines,
sorry I said that,
like trauma therapy and like a solve instead of a salve.
Yeah.
If you need a solve in your inbox, come to In the River of What's Happening Now.
Yes.
So you can find, if you want to read my writing, you know, those are for free for the sort of basic level. And then you can find ways to book me on thecultofmindy.com or at my sort of like professional therapist website, which is a Center for Artist Resilience .org.
Amazing.
All of these things have such great names.
Wow.
To the Center for Artist Resilience.
And before we get to our final question we ask everyone, we just want to thank everyone for listening in.
Yes.
For joining us, for following, for downloading, for... You should share some Dr. Mindy Netafee. Send Dr. Mindy Netafee into other friends' boxes and our show along with it. And finally, our final question for you is, what is something seemingly trivial that makes you come a little unhinged, a little unglued?
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem trivial to me, but single-use plastics make me insane. I'm one of those people. I actually have to, when I see people drinking out of like a, you know, a plastic little Arrowhead bottle or something, my like eye starts twitching and I have to hold back from like criticizing.
Yeah. You're like, you're going to use that for watercolor paint later, right?
Right. You're going to use that to plant some starts?
Because that's not going to the recycling bin.
I have a pamphlet for you for how to reuse that 30 more times.
Yeah.
You do have your own water bottle, right?
Yes.
That's for emergencies, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Ugh, awful.
Oh,
well, but also, ugh.
Yeah, understood. Well, thank you so much, Mindy. It's been such a pleasure.
Yeah, it has. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew.
Oh, thank you, Frain.
This is so fun.
Yeah, and thank you to our fabulous behind-the-scenes editor and producer, Julia Oppenheimer. Frain Masters is executive producer. Frain Masters and myself are co-hosts and co-creators. Thank you to musician and frontman for Lostlander, Matt Sheehy, for creating our theme music. And thank you to Powell's Books and Kiln Coworking Space for making this episode and our live shows possible. We recorded this show at X-Ray FM. Find them online or 91.1 or 107.1. And you can find more information about myself, Frain, and Backfence Storytelling shows and workshops at backfencestorytelling.com.
Thanks again for listening.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.